This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Cliff Edwards there. From a Cliff Edwards collection, you know, which when it comes to Cliff Edwards at this point, really you're just looking for records that say best of Cliff Edwards or something like that. Ukulele Ike, as he was also known, and that track called Remember. I play that for it. By the way, hello, this is Mick. You're listening to Trivial Thursdays on WRFL. Thanks for tuning in. It's about 10 after the hour, and happy to be here, as always, with you, he says, pouring a cup of coffee. Listen. Yeah, that's right. Let's see. So Ukulele Ike there, I played that because this weekend is the thing that's been getting me crazy for a while now. In Needmore, Indiana, is this thing that many people will sort of, if you be sitting down, in case you want to laugh, is the Ukulele World Congress in rural Indiana, where a number of ukulele, and when I say a number, I mean like 800 ukulele people will be convening. And so you're going to hear some ukulele songs from me. By the way, Cliff Edwards won't be one of them, although the ghost of him, maybe. Cliff Edwards was the voice of Jiminy Cricket in Pinocchio, by the way, and wildly famous in his day. So, but I have a few other ukulele songs from some, you know, more contemporary people. Not that that's why you tune in to Trivial Thursdays, because I'm sure you tune in to Trivial Thursdays to hear the wonderful times that we have with a variety of guests who come by and visit. And today's show is jam-packed, I just want to say. In a little while, Paige Hankel is going to be here from the ever-growing Play Think Festival. And then we're going to talk to Tanya Torp in a little while by phone about the Funky Fun Prom Run. All right, I remembered that, which is, you know, one of those things where you dress up funny and go running. There's the bike prom coming up, which I wish I knew the details of, which is soon. You can find it. Bike Prom Lexington. You're a big kid. You can search. And then also one of Lexington's most venerable festivals, the Festival of the Bluegrass, is coming up, and Anne-Marie Cornett is coming in, maybe bringing along some musicians. We're hoping. It'll be hard. Honestly, it'll be hard to top last week. Was it last week that the Restless Leg String Band was on, I think, and just killed it here in the studio. So anyway, and then kicking things off here, just to not dilly-dally whatsoever, Tom Hansel's here. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. It's actually great to be back in Lexington and great to be back in Kentucky.
Yeah, right. So you're, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Dayton, Ohio.
Okay. But you spent a lot of time in Kentucky, especially in...
Yeah, in Whitesburg. Lived in Whitesburg. About half my life there. Yep, 20 years in Letcher County.
I adore Whitesburg. Now, did you wind up there because of Apple Shop or...
That's right. Yeah.
...extenuating circumstances?
Because of Apple Shop.
Okay.
And I've worked at Apple Shop's community radio, WMMT,
for... Yeah.
Am I allowed to mention other radio stations
well,
on the air?
Well, I make an exception for that one.
I worked there for about 10 years.
MMT is a great... it's one of the sort of beacons of, you know, one of the great inspirations for RFL. I'm sorry,
And of course, everybody from WMMT listens to WRFL when they're in Lexington. So that's how I learned about it. And then I started making films with Apple Shop back around 2000.
Uh-huh.
And then got married and had to move to North Carolina.
I love to hear people say the word had to in North Carolina.
Yeah. So,
together.
So I'm happy to be back in Kentucky. And it sounds like there's all kinds of stuff going on this weekend from all your list of guests. But I did want to talk about an event that's going to happen Monday. So if people aren't too wiped out after the weekend, come to the Kentucky Theater Monday night, 7 o'clock. We're going to be showing a film that I just finished called After Coal, which looks at coal mining both in eastern Kentucky and in South Wales. A lot of people think just Kentucky is coal mining, but in fact, coal mining's been all over the world, kind of obvious if you think about it. And the people in South Wales had to deal with the decline of mining back in the 1980s.
How did you how did you find your way? I mean, it seems kind of obvious to me, but how did you find your way into this topic, or how did you make the connection to whales where this topic is concerned? You know, you spend a lot of time in Whitesburg, so I get that. You're surrounded by strip mining.
Well, it turned out that there have been people from eastern Kentucky and southwestern Virginia going over to whales since 1974. People named John Gaventa is a scholar, Helen Lewis. The two of them were living in the UK and started a exchange of rank and file miners during the 1974 miner strike in Wales and during the Brookside strike in Harlan County. And so I discovered all of that material in the archives at Appalachian State, including amazing stuff of the Strange Creek Singers, Hazel Dickens, Mike Seeger, Alice Gerard, all went over and played in miners' clubs in Wales in like 1976.
So this was a kind of an effort at solidarity in some ways?
Exactly.
What I'm saying is it wasn't the mining companies being like, hey, we can get cheaper labor. Let's swap the miners around.
No, this was very much an effort in solidarity and trying to exchange lessons. It started out as lessons among working miners.
Yeah.
About ways to improve working conditions, safety conditions, pay, those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, as mining declined, the exchange became much broader, and it became about how do we keep these communities together?
Mm-hmm.
How do we find new forms of employment? And how do we honor the culture that came from, some of which came from coal mining? Great music, great songs.
You mentioned
the sense of taking care of each other, watching each other's backs. All of that has been part of this exchange over the last 42 years, but particularly over the last 5 and 10 years as mining jobs have declined in Appalachia as well.
So this is a... fellowship's not the right word, but
exchange.
An exchange.
Yeah, that's right.
That is still very much, that's still active?
It's so active that I was picking up a delegation from Wales at the Bluegrass Airport at 1 o'clock in the morning last night.
Is that right?
So we have three Welshmen here. They're actually sleeping right now. Two of whom are musicians. One of whom's named Chris King, and his grandfather was actually a leader in the miners' union over in Wales. So he's going to be performing music with his friend Nigel Jones after the screening. That's Monday night.
This is on Monday?
Monday the 6th at 7 p.m. at Kentucky Theater. So we'll screen the film first. It's an hour. And then we'll have some live music afterwards. And the show is free and open to the public. We, of course, accept donations, but we decided to do it free and open to the public in order to get the broadest number of people in there.
So let's see. So when did you get a sense that this was a movie that you wanted to make?
We actually started by having a conference because I work for a university. That's what universities do. We have a conference. So we brought people that were involved in that 1974 exchange over to Appalachian State to start talking.
Okay.
And we had people from Kentucky there as well, particularly people from Kentuckians for the Commonwealth. And just listening to that conversation as it happened, not just the formal presentations at the conference, but the informal presentations and watching people start to share songs, I was thinking, yeah, this is going to be a movie. We've got to figure out how to make the movie. And, of course, that was 5 years ago.
Okay.
And the film was just been finished. It was actually out on Kentucky Educational Television back in April.
Okay.
And we've been making the festival circuits. I was actually just in Wales last week, showed it at the Hay Festival in Hay-on-Wye, Wales, and then as well as in the communities where it was made.
And it's called After Coal, right?
Yep, After Coal.
Tom Hansel's here. We're going to take a quick musical break. Hazel Dickens there. What did you say Hazel Dickens was associated with?
She was came over to Wales as part of, actually it was the Strange Creek Singers tour in 1976, and Helen Lewis brought them to a miners club, and we found tapes of that while I was doing the After Coal project. Really amazing stuff. You know, the Strange Creek Singers was both Hazel and Alice, who you heard singing there, doing the Coal Miners Blues, the Carter Family song.
Okay.
But they also had Mike Seeger, who's famous in his own right, as well as Tracy Schwartz, who's well-known both as traditional Appalachian and Cajun musician. And then a banjo player named Lamar Greer, who actually I don't know much about his history outside of the Strange Creek Singers.
It's always interesting, I think, when people come through, or for anyone who's visited Appalachia, Whitesburg, Apple Shop, that whole region, because if you're, I was just down there with the Kentucky Natural Lands Trust at the Pine Mountain Settlement School, which was just an absolutely stunning experience. And I want to thank them for having this group
of
artists.
That place is a treasure, yeah.
It's an incredible treasure. But one of the things you get to soak in if you're down there and if you get to stay somewhere like that or anywhere really, but is the unbelievable, the tradition that's just in the land, that's in the trees, it's in the mountains. That's transmitted through musical instruments and artist tools and whatnot. And you just mentioned a slew of musicians from a culture that is so rich.
And that's for the, while doing this After Coal project, that's been one of the interesting things that I've discovered is you actually get a similar feeling over in South Wales. Now they don't have the tradition of fiddles and banjos like we do. But they have a singing tradition, particularly male voice choirs, a lot of which started as coal miners' choirs, and they would actually have competitions to see which mine had the best choirs way back, I'm talking a century ago.
That is fascinating.
And today, still, we were just there in Wales showing the film and having musicians from Appalachia and Wales play, and it was amazing when the audience would sing along. Everybody was in tune. It was so impressive. And they knew all the words on the Welsh songs.
So with your move, with the movie, you kind of show the part of it is this interface of culture between coal mining, and coal mining has this interesting history of having art and music culture kind of attached to it. It seems like, and I wonder if you have any sense of why that's the case.
Well, I can tell you, I'd actually asked that question to a number of people I interviewed while I was doing the documentary, and a lot of people said that some of it has to do with work conditions, with the fact that you're in a dangerous place, often long ways away from help, so you have to watch each other's back, and that in Wales, the miners in particular would get together and sing after work as a way to just kind of both blow off steam and as an expression of camaraderie. I think you see in Appalachia people not singing together as much, but certainly a lot of miners have made music. I mean, there's the George Davis, the singing miner from Hazard, people like Doc Boggs that worked in the mines for a little bit, even people like Lee Sexton, famous banjo player from Letcher County. And a lot of them would be composing songs related to their experience of the mine, sharing songs. A lot of people would take, with union efforts, would take traditional hymns and switch them over to become union songs.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just such a, I think in Appalachia, it becomes blowing off steam in some ways.
Right.
Or just dealing with what life brings you. I mean, that's part of what music is great for.
Sure.
Is when you're feeling something particularly intense, a lot of times music can help you channel those feelings into something that's mm-hmm. productive, help you understand them, help you connect with other people that might be feeling the same thing, and help you figure out a way to move forward.
Right.
And I think you see that happening in both communities.
And in this case, and in the case of some of this indigenous music, if I don't know if that's really an appropriate term, but the playing of the music, which I think is not always in sort of, I don't know, more mainstream, less rural culture, I wonder sometimes if there's more just kind of listening to music, basically, whether it's the radio
true.
Or whatever.
Participating.
But participating in music, having what I sometimes like to call personal music, which is not just like your favorite record, but like music that you yourself are a part of, that you create, or that you are a performer of in some ways. And you don't have to be like some incredible, you know, incredibly gifted musician to do this. A lot of these songs are easy enough for anyone to play,
right?
And this is one of the things. Like I'm a ukulele teacher and player, and I like to spread that to people because it's like three chords in the truth. You know, a lot of times, and that's true. A lot of these songs, right?
Yeah, and in some ways, I think that part that's underscores one of the main themes of the After Coal documentary is that in places where you're going through changes like the decline of the coal industry or going through tough times, a lot of times the solutions don't come from outside. The solutions need to come from inside. You gotta make your own stuff up, and that tradition of making music is just one of many examples of people figuring out how to use the resources that they have available just amongst themselves, whether that's doing a little farming on your land, whether that's turning an abandoned mine site into a recreation area, whether that's creating educational workshops to provide job skills. That these are some of the stories that are in the After Coal documentary. That what you see is people looking around, finding what resources they have and creating something, which is exactly what people have been doing with music in the coal fields, right, both in Appalachia and Wales for centuries.
Tom Hansel's here. He's the director of After Coal. It's screening at the Kentucky Theater on Monday, along with a musical performance by Chris King, right?
That's right. Yeah, Chris King is the grandson of a coal miner and leader of the miners' union in Merthyr Tydfil, Wales, which is kind of the center of the Welsh coalfields. Mm-hmm. He's a really interesting guy and can speak to some of that history and the changes that he's seen in his lifetime. He was very small when the mine started to close down, so he can. But he's held on to some of those music traditions while living through the new economy.
Right. Tom, can you talk a little bit about what's this, you know, in the most flowery, poetic of terms of a vague, vague question, what's this journey been like for you of making this movie? Did you say, I think you said it's taken about 5 years, is that right?
About 5 years. And
making independent filmmaking, let's just note here, is it's a job for absolute misogynists, I guess. No, I'm sorry, excuse me. I haven't had enough coffee yet. Yeah, please, everyone, just edit that part out. Masochists. I knew that word didn't sound right in my head. I apologize. Yeah, masochists. I mean, like, it costs way less to make a movie than it used to cost, but it still costs a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And finding that money, it can be just very true. You wind up wearing an awful lot of hats. Isn't that true?
That's the truth. And like most independent filmmakers, I also have a full-time job. So, you know, I'm teaching at Appalachian State University. Fortunately, the university has archives and some support, but a lot of this travel and finding crew and all that I'm doing on my own. But I think to me, when I started the film, I thought that I could go over to Wales and find real concrete specific solutions, almost a template, and bring it to Appalachia and start talking about it, and the problem would be solved. We'd have a new economy after the coal.
That would have been so great of you to do that.
but what I found is that, you know, things aren't perfect over in Wales either. The coal fields did lose population, but the communities did not disappear.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the important lesson, is that communities have stuck around because they figured out ways to take care of each other. They figured out ways to find their own resources, to look at what's locally available.
We've done the same thing with Center Point downtown. Sorry.
Yeah, I've driven by there.
Okay, sorry. I just had to do
it's
that.
It's a little
sorry.
Different.
But, I know, I'm sorry.
But to me, that was a big part of the lesson, is that there's not a simple solution. There are some basic things, I think, that are really important, like protecting water quality. It's hard to do community development without good water.
Yep.
So some of that is actually a direct lesson you can apply. But a lot of it is what keeps communities together is a spirit. People want to stay together. People feel connected to their place. They feel connected to their neighbors. They have patterns of taking care of each other. And they have a strong will to be in that place and to make that place better. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's what's really inspiring. So we've got, in the film, we've got stories from primarily from Harlan County, Kentucky, a little bit from Letcher County, and then from the Delice Valley in South Wales and the Avon Valley in South Wales.
That's so cool. And yeah, sort of comparing and contrasting them. So many miles between those places.
Yeah, so we'll
so
be
many miles between Letcher County and Harlan. I'm just kidding.
That's true, too. And a few mountains in between them,
that's
too.
That's right.
And sometimes an ocean. Yeah.
But yeah, so that's amazing
yeah.
to see and hear about that.
Yep. So we'll be bringing the film to the Kentucky Theater on Monday, June the 6th
yeah.
at 7 p.m., showing the film. And then right after that, have Chris King, and Wales presenting his music.
And I hope, I wish you the best with touring around with this film. Are you going to take it to festivals and that kind of thing? You said you've done a little bit of
I'm
that,
actually
right?
on my way to the Seed Time Festival in Whitesburg, Apple Shops Festival, where we will also do a film screening and have more of a musical exchange between Welsh musicians and Appalachian musicians.
And it's the Seed Time Festival for those who, if you choose not to do any of the things that we're going to talk about on the show tonight, you could. When Seed Time is when does it start? Is it this weekend?
Yeah, it starts Friday. So it starts tomorrow and goes through, it's basically all day Friday and Saturday. Lots of good stuff happening
at Appalachian.
It's
such an incredible time to visit.
Although it does sound like there's lots of stuff happening in Lexington too.
It's true.
But if you want to get away to the mountains.
Let's see. So, and you're here at one of the great and most glorious and beautiful old movie theaters that you could. I challenge you to find to screen your film at a more beautiful place than the Kentucky.
I've been to a lot of theaters, and the Kentucky is absolutely right up there.
Yeah, it's a treasure.
One of my favorite places to see both movies and music.
Yep, absolutely. And you've got both of them. Tom Hansel, who's going to be down at the Kentucky on Monday, showing his movie After Coal. Yeah. And with Chris King, I'm gonna send you out with some Chris King here.
That sounds great.
And I know that I think you've got a Facebook page for this.
Yep. And there's a website aftercoal.com. People, as you said earlier, y'all are grown ups. You can Google After Coal. It shows up pretty well. Uh-huh. But yeah, we've got Facebook, Twitter, and the website.
Fantastic. Tom, thanks for coming and talking, and best wishes to you and your movie. Right. Please come back and visit. Okay.
Well, thanks.
And I just hope for all the best in terms of accolades for your film and for your continued masochistic career as a filmmaker.
All right. Well, thanks for having me on WRFL.
This
Love
is,
the station.
Let's see. Thank you very much. And I'm a huge fan of WMMT. As I said, WRFL in many ways inspired by WMMT. The community radio station out of Whitesburg, Kentucky. Here's Chris King and Hotel Radio with Salt of the Earth. That's right?
Yep. Yeah, Salt of the Earth, and he's singing about his grandfather who was a miner.
Yeah, here we go. So we'll be back. This is Trivial Thursdays on WRFL, and we will be back with some guests from the Playthink Festival and quite a few other things coming your way in the next hour. And I can't do math. We'll be back. Music there from before the break. We heard from the Flea Bitten Dogs. From their album, Hanging Around the Hydrant. That was the track, the Willie Nelson track, actually. Funny how time slips away. These guys are... some of my ukulele playing friends who are currently at the Great Northern Ukulele Festival in Great Britain, but are on their way back here for the thing that a lot of ukulele players from all over the area are excited about, this event called the Ukulele World Congress. So you're getting some ukulele music from me because that's where I'm going shortly after leaving here. This is Trivial Thursdays, though, and I'm Mick, and thank you for tuning in. I want to give a shout-out to Tom Hansel for talking about After Coal, his movie, which is screening on Monday at the Kentucky Theater, and I am delighted to have my friend Paige Hankla here in the studio.
Hi.
I'll turn your mic on.
Hi.
Hi, Paige. I haven't seen you in a while, so I'll take these circumstances.
Awesome. It's been a minute.
Yeah, you've kind of got your hands full.
Yeah,
a little
something
bit.
About a 1-year-old keeps you at home.
Right, exactly. And how's that 1-year-old doing?
He's fabulous and smiley.
That is great to hear. And then you also kind of keep yourself busy with kind of ever growing festival that I seem to remember starting as a much smaller event than I think it's become.
Very true.
You brought one of the organizers along too, right?
Yeah, I'm here with Marie Conker.
Hello.
Hi, Marie.
Hi.
How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Thanks. I haven't been up this early in a while.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, don't you just, I mean, like the upcoming at the Play Think Festival, which is coming up, which is your all's thing, don't you, do you just stay up all the time for that, or how does that work?
24/7.
24/7, yeah.
From about 6 a.m. till about 5 a.m.
Yeah, and that is that at the festival or the entire week leading up to it?
Both.
I mean, what do you really have to do at this point? How many people do you have, like, teaching things?
83.
83? Like, I don't even understand. How does it even work? I mean, what, 83 people, how does it, what's your broad stroke for, like, it, like, I'm not really meaning the elevator speech, but, like, PlayThink is this, it's kind of like this, it's kind of like this fill in the blank. You fill in the blank. What's it like?
It's kind of like this loose organism that you just kind of have to give basic parameters and then let people fill out.
Oh, that sounds educational and occasionally frustrating.
Yes, very much so. You know, because there's a lot of artists, they're like, oh, I want to do this humongous, massive thing. And I'm like, all right, so you can do the humongous, massive thing, but we're going to scale it back by about however much needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then they still do the massive, fabulous art, but that it actually happens.
Okay, right. See, this is what I was wondering about.
And it
about.
Looks good.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, artists sometimes have bigger visions
Okay. And
are capable in the time frame.
So finding a way to, I think in the business world, they call that managing expectations.
Right? that's what it was.
So that's interesting. I mean, and that times 83, is that?
Exactly. Well, and we have 83 instructors that are teaching, you know, 1 to 8 different classes or play shops, as we call them. So we have about 250 different play shops. And then we have artists and art installations on top of that. So there's really kind of a staff of, I don't know, almost 200 people when you do volunteers and administrators and instructors and artists and so on and so forth.
Your partner Marie here has what looks like the University of Kentucky's class schedule or something like that.
It's massive. It's massive. So she has 83 instructors. They are from over 26 states in the region, and they're teaching over how many?
250
workshops, and they're everything from movement and flow workshops to art, to music, to it just sort of covers everybody. If you want to be involved and you want to move, there's a workshop for you. If you just want to watch, there's something for you. If you want to make art, you can do that. If you want to make music, you can do that. If you just want to hang out all day and wait until the disco at what time? Midnight? 2 a.m.?
No, the artist won't tell me.
Okay.
There's a disco dome setting up.
Uh-huh.
It's supposed to be mysterious, but I just kind of let the cat out of the bag.
Right.
And they don't know what time, and they won't tell me the musicians that'll be there, but there's...
I know that dome, though.
I don't know that you do.
No? Is it a different dome?
Maybe you do. I don't know.
Uh-huh. Well, my dome's out there, you know.
No longer.
What? What happened? Did it got ripped down?
The wind blew it away last year.
The wind blew it away?
Somebody put a parachute on it.
Well, I used to do that.
Well, they left it, the parachute on it, during a storm.
Oh, right. Well, that's too bad.
But the workshops, you have anything from turntabling to beatboxing to firewalking to hula hooping to, like,
I've done all that. What else you got? that's amazing.
Yeah, let me list some. How about ecstatic dance, drum circles?
Let's just have a segment of the show where you guys just, like, alternate listing the things that you're offering. Because that'll go on for the rest of the show.
I could fill the time that way.
I know.
Yoga, flow, poi.
That's the second time I've heard flow. What does flow mean?
Good question.
Yeah.
You want to take that?
Well,
flow is this place we can find ourselves in when we are truly engaged in some sort of activity. It's not above and beyond our capabilities, but it's engaging and it's challenging. And we find ourselves in a place of total concentration. It was really a phrase coined by a pretty interesting man, Mihai.
Can you say his name? Because I can't.
I used to be able to say his name, maybe not at this time of day. Mihai Csikszentmihalyi, I think it's Mihaly, that's how you say it. Anyway, the idea, though, is that you're challenging yourself in some form of activity, some kind of activity, so that you're at a place where you're feeling you're just in the moment. That's how I could put it. You're so in the moment that you don't feel anything or you don't pay attention to anything else happening around you. And there are a lot of the arts that Paige has, that she built this festival around these flow arts. That's how the festival was built, because there's a real movement of a lot of people to try to find flow in whatever form they can, whether it's yoga or poi or a meditation or dance or lots of different ways. And so she's built it up around that idea of flow, and then into the basics of movement that so many people want to get into, some form of exercise or movement. And then she's added art for the eyes and actually for the hands-on experience, and music. And the music is a huge piece this year that has not had as much attention, right?
Very true. In the past, we've had 3 or 4 bands or DJs, and this year we have close to 13 or 15, somewhere in there.
It's called Playthink, the Playthink mm-hmm. Festival, which is a lot of what Marie just described in some ways, mm-hmm. Where the flow arts aspect is concerned. But it just seems to be boundless, kind of. It seems like you cast a pretty wide net.
Purposely, yes. I really want
a wide, sparkly, glittery net.
I really want it to be for every person, and that every person could show up and kind of make it their own experience and do whatever they want.
Well, I remember last year, people coming back from the festival last year, some friends of mine who I knew, especially some younger friends who were kind of came back all agog. Like, do you have kind of a growing audience of older teens and stuff, I think, right?
I mean, we have young kids, 7, 8 years old, that have already started fire dancing, like on fire. Their parents are, you know, watching them, of course. And then we have like 90-year-old ladies that come. Uh-huh. I mean, the age range of people is phenomenal to me. I don't even understand it. But there's definitely some, like, you know, teeny boppers, for lack of a better word, that come and are really loving it.
Yeah.
And then there's definitely, that seems like the 30 and 40-year-old crowd is really very present.
Yeah.
What's terrific, too, is how family-friendly it is. So you can have whole families there. Parents feel very comfortable with everything that's offered. There's a real family feeling, so that there's everybody's welcome. There's something for the kids to do all the time. The kids are, of course, expected to. Parents are in charge of their kids, but it's a festival where parents can be very, very comfortable, mm-hmm. not worried about having their kids at their side every second. There's also all kinds of things, activities for the mm-hmm. kids to do mm-hmm. while the parents are doing their own activities.
Right.
The kids' tent has workshops going on all day, just like all the other workshops. Kids of all ages, so if you, as an adult, yeah. want to go, you can go as well. There's a creek, you know, Kentucky Creek, that you can go play in all day long. Just tall enough, it's fun, but short enough, you don't have to worry about any dangers. Right. And the field is set up in such a way that no matter where you are taking a workshop, you can look up, and it might be, you know, quite a ways away, but you could still see your child in the distance.
Mm-hmm.
Towards a pretty safe-feeling community. The Urban Ninja Project here in town comes and sets up an obstacle course. We have a little kids' dome this year, so we can feel safe about them climbing. There's, it's very, very
you mean,
available.
So when you
children.
Say kids' dome and climbing, you mean it's like this geodesic dome kind of?
It's a geodesic dome that is more like 6 foot tall mm-hmm. instead of, you know, 15 or 20. Mm-hmm. So when your child climbs on it, you don't feel like they're going to climb it.
I like how you say climbing on it just like it's a given, like they're going to climb on it. Because it does sort of happen that way, right?
It's going to happen.
And there's a doodle dome.
There is a doodle dome. We have all the domes.
You can't say doodle dome on the radio. I'm sorry.
I think you just did.
This has chalkboard panels all over it to where you can paint and draw on the dome.
Outside, inside?
Both. All of the above. Yeah, we have all the domes this year. We have something called the Home Dome, the Disco Dome, the Doodle Dome.
Is this becoming Burning Man out there or what?
Burning Man's definitely an inspiration.
Yeah.
You've been a few times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is right in our backyard. It's kind of crazy to think we have this regional festival right outside of Berea.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And it's called Homegrown Hideaways, right?
Homegrown Hideaways. Yeah.
They kind of specialize in being the sort of the base camp for this for different sorts of things, but I think you guys mm-hmm. are maybe kind of one of their flagship kind of things. I don't know.
I'd like to think so, but I, you know,
yeah,
I'm a little biased.
She says it's her favorite.
Playthink Festival coming up this weekend. This weekend? No.
June 15th.
Okay, yeah.
It's a Wednesday to Sunday. It's a little odd for festivals, but I like to do, you know, almost a whole week.
Well, but yeah, but you're doing kind of again, the Burning Man thing a little bit, where like the people that can, you're making it possible for the people who can come earlier to do so. And then the weekend warriors can come when they can come. And then those who really like hanging out, and also maybe, you know, here's what you're going to, one day you're going to get to the point where the people are like, oh, I don't know, man, I really like it. I like it early in the week. It's early in the week. It gets really, gets kind of crazy towards the end.
And day trippers can come if it's a, yeah. if it's something that you haven't tried and you don't really know if you want to camp, if you want to be part of that, but you want to check out the festival. Let's see.
You don't want to know. You don't, if you if you're not sure you want to camp, or as my wife likes to call it, be trapped.
Be trapped. You can come and buy a day tripper ticket for just from it. It basically it's good for the whole day and overnight till noon the next day.
Okay.
So in case you do decide to stay, you can, or you can leave. You can kind of get a taste of it, so you know what to expect, and then next year you can come back and be a full fledged. Playful.
Give me fire walking, silk hanging.
See, we hadn't even mentioned aerial arts. You know what's going to be there.
I'm well, you know, if you just want to talk to me, we can just go have coffee. what are some of the new things that here? Okay, two part question. What are some of the classics that people are, you know, that every year just people are in droves for? And then what are some of the new things that you expect to be?
Everything is so dynamic. It seems like every year there's something so brand new.
We said you've got like turntablism. Yeah,
actually, which, it's a DJ that's here.
Yeah, of course it is. It's Tom Miller, I'm thinking.
Right? That's right. I don't ever know what name to call him because I feel like he goes by five
DJ
different
DJ Tommy
names.
Mizla. Yeah.
Tommy Mizla, Tommy.
He does the most incredible old school hip hop show for countless years here at RFL.
He'll be playing music on Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'll be teaching a breakdancing class, a turntabling class. He's just kind of all around great, amazing, intelligent dude.
Exactly. Kind of a hip hop superhero.
And
right?
What are some of the band names?
Band names, man. We got people from all over the place.
Yeah.
We have Fat Box, Big Atomic, Driftwood Gypsy, Montego, Captain Midnight Band, Living Light, which is a DJ out of North Carolina. Bayoku, which is one of my favorites.
How come?
Oh, man. the energy? He's just really...
Wait, Fatbox has a song called Kentucky.
Okay.
It may be the Everly Brothers song.
I don't know. And then we have somebody late Saturday night called The Flow.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't not book him when he contacted me, simply because of his name.
You know,
Honey and the Bee.
You know, he changed the band name right before he called you, right?
Probably. Honey and the Bee, which is out of Berea, they're really family friendly. But some of the new things, we have a Navajo flute player named Fred Keems that's kind of locally that's going to be there on Sunday. He's going to play the flute to the yoga, which is really awesome. We have this tree stilt guy.
Isn't there yoga going on like kind of all the time?
There are 26 different types of yoga.
Every hour.
It is amazing. There's laughter yoga, which is my ultimate favorite because I don't have to do the yoga poses. I just have to laugh.
And this is the thing. I've never done it right where everybody just starts laughing. And at first it seems like it would be kind of awkward. But then after a while, everybody's really laughing.
Yep.
Like first it's that classic kind of you pretend to laugh and then you're really laughing.
Kind of like the 2-year-old. That starts laughing and then just can't stop.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
One of the things that's brand new this year that I'm, like, the most ecstatic about is this tree guy. It's the Tree of Life. What's the movie that has the tree guy that's named Groot? I know, I'm terrible.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Or the Lion King. I'm not sure which one.
Looks so much like Groot. It's phenomenal, but he's a guy.
Yeah.
He's on stilts and he's done his own costume.
This guy looks just like Groot.
And he looks like a walking, talking tree.
Put this up on Trivial Thursday's Facebook page. All right, can we do that? Just hope our listeners can see the guy who looks like him.
That's probably my ultimate favorite. We have a fire walk the last 2 years now. He'll be back. It's a transformational thing. You're walking across fire.
I'm not walking across fire. How does that work? I don't understand. Like, because the burning and everything.
It's because you are so in.
Now, I will say I walked on eggs one time.
It's kind of the same thing. It's probably even better.
I mean, I walk on eggs on a certain level every day of my life. But really walked on eggs. Twice now I've done it. With Nerd Squad, I think is what they're called, who are on my show, I think, next week. But anyway, through William Wells Brown Elementary School.
Fire's probably easier.
Yeah. Yeah?
Yeah.
Why don't you get some eggs out there, and then we'll see.
How about Legos?
Walking on Legos?
Yeah, have you ever done that?
Just like, well, if you're talking about if you built something out of Legos, that's fine. But one Lego on the ground, that
like
is...
Like a sea of Legos?
That's impossible.
No. We have a cacao ceremony on Thursday night, which is kind of where you're just having a ceremony all about drinking chocolate.
I have that every day.
Cacao is the pure firm of chocolate.
Oh, I'm sorry,
you said
chocolate. I thought you said bourbon. let's see. Paige and Marie are here from the Playthink Festival. This is your all's...
Fifth year.
Fifth year for Playthink. I remember when you were just kind of dreaming about this and kind of shaking your head and saying, I'm going to do this thing.
And you've grown it from, what was it the first year?
The first year we had 115 people, 60 of them were instructors.
I was just about to make a joke about that.
And this year you expect 1,000.
About 1,000.
Participants. Mm-hmm. And the space is large enough to hold a couple of thousand, so nobody will feel like they're penned in or trapped.
It'll probably get tight this year, suspect. Yeah.
But you can camp with your car. The system is set up really, really great to just pull in with your car and camp right next to your car. You know, I was thinking that Paige has mentioned some of the new things, and we talked about the music and the flow arts, but there are also a bunch of workshops on conscious living, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like organic food. Community building.
Plant identification.
Plant ID.
What are some other examples? You said conscious living. This seems to be a topic ever on the rise.
Mindfulness and meditation classes, mm-hmm. along with being conscientious in the way that you're, you know, building community or interacting with other people. I just listed the two other things that I can't remember because I have a 1-year-old.
And then also she includes vendors of all sorts, and they're really mm-hmm. cool. I mean, really unique shopping experiences. So if you're into yoga or the flow arts, or you're just into something totally new, you just can't imagine the beautiful art that some of these artists that make for sale.
It's where I buy my wardrobe every year.
Art.
It's where I buy my wardrobe every
year. Now, what's
year?
The deal? Like, if people, this is the part that terrifies me about camping always, is like, oh no, I have to get food. How many Subway sandwiches will I take with me? Not really, but does everybody need to bring their own food? There's food vendors.
There are food vendors on site.
Okay.
We have the Epicure out of Richmond, which is the best food in the world. We have the Holy Crepe, which is all about crepes. We have the Village Trough, a local eatery out of Berea. We have Masterpiece Superfoods and Smoothies, which is all like superfood smoothie stuff. Mm. We have Junebug Probiotic Honey Soda, so it's like a fermented beverage.
Uh-huh.
I feel like I'm missing something, but
so
lots of
so you can eat. You
things.
Can eat out there.
You can totally
eat.
If you didn't want to pack everything. Okay. To feed yourself, you can.
So all that plus 15 cans of Pringles for me. Yep. Good.
Maybe a few Kit Kats.
Let's see. So, what's your favorite? You have to now. Now you share what you secretly think is going to be a huge hit this year.
I think the music.
Yeah.
This kind of, every year I seem to have like something that sneaks up on me that ends up being my goal for that year. The last 2 years has been all about art and art installations, and then this year has been all about the music.
Yeah.
And next year's going to be all about the theme camp.
Next year is going to be all about the theme camp.
Yeah,
you're going to do that. It really are.
I already tried to do theme camps this year, so, and uh-huh. I had like 3 apply, and so they'll be there. But it's not a big
Serenity now.
So she's going to have a.
That's your theme camp.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is also kind of a Burning Man thing too.
I know.
Right? There's nothing wrong with that. It's great
ideas.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
And the performance showcase page, you're going to have 2, right? Friday and Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
So if you did not come in for the whole weekend, you could still get a chance to see the performer showcase. So these top-notch instructors Not all of them, but many of them volunteer to be part of a performer showcase, and it's amazing. It's it can be you know, double fire staff, part of a fire show. Then you'll have the aerialists doing their performance. You've got even some slackline demonstrations, juggling, just the works. And it runs for about an hour and a half on Friday and Saturday night. Mm-hmm. So that'll go before, kind of in between bands. The bands will go starting early evening all night long. And I think the Disco Dome is actually a silent disco.
Maybe.
Oh, wait, so how does that work? That's not the headphone thing,
yeah.
is it? Okay. That's pretty funny. I've done that. I did that. They did that in downtown Lexington for not the Breeders' Cup, but the World Equestrian Games.
Mm-hmm.
It's hilarious to see,
hilarious.
And really fun to, just like there's mm-hmm. there's a somebody. It seemed. See, I was like, for a second, I was like, wait, I want to do this business. You need a bunch of headphones that are connected wirelessly, and then a DJ to play some slamming tracks off of their iPod or something. And then you've got everybody, and you're all dancing to the same music, but it's not making any noise outside of.
It's really great for late night stuff.
Yeah.
Because then all the families can sleep.
Right.
And you can just laugh at all the dancers. It's not very nice, though.
So, okay, I've got a track to play from you mentioned some of the many musical acts that are playing. I noticed that Fatbox plays a song called Kentucky, which may or may not be the Everly Brothers song, so we're going to find out. Hopefully it's not the song Kentucky that's laced with profanity.
Yeah, I hope it's radio-friendly.
I haven't heard one of those, but I hope there isn't one. But anyway, so Playthink, obviously you guys are all over social media and all over Facebook and all that stuff. But your HQ... web address is
playthinkfest.com.
Yeah, playthinkfest.com.
June 15th through the 19th.
Yeah.
Homegrown Hideaways, Berea.
Big time. Which is, so it's like an hour and change from here. Is that
I'd
right?
say 45 minutes.
45, yeah.
To another world.
Totally easy to drive from here to there and uh-huh. back. And my favorite, there's no cell phone service.
I was going to say that, and then I held off a couple times as like a plus or a minus, but I think it's a huge plus.
I think it's amazing.
Yeah.
Like for me to not have to pick up my phone or check an email.
Right.
It's like the best vacation ever.
Yeah, people signing off of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too.
I can't wait. As an organizer, I cannot wait to not have cell phone service.
It's funny. I was Lucy... My wife she's in Mexico right now on an actual vacation, like the first real vacation she's had in forever. And she was having she thought she'd like work things out with the phone company to have phone service there, and it wasn't true. And I was just like, just let it go, you know, I realized where we've gotten in our society kind of, where I'm like, mm-hmm.
just let it go.
Take a vacation from that thing. And Facebook me later on Wi-Fi. You know, you do what you can. So anyway, yeah. So, but Homegrown Hideaways, zip, nothing, right?
Nothing.
So and you can take a real vacation from your cell phone.
And a chance to meet people from all over the region. So not just the instructors come from those 26 states, but we have participants coming
from Michigan, Florida, California, New York, I mean, really all over the nation. We have a few come in from Europe, which I'm always heavily surprised by and humbled, really.
It is, yeah, it's amazing. Now you can strive for some Asian visitors, maybe.
Let's do it.
From Asia. I mean, yeah. Not just, you know, not just Asiatic. So, yeah, I mean, because it's funny. There's some people, Australians, you need to, the Australians, they get around. They get around. You're like, come on over. Yeah, they're much more generous.
That'll
with their
be my next advertising goal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I saw them all over Vietnam. That's because they get like an unbelievable amount of, well, it's actually a really reasonable amount of time off. We get an unbelievably pathetic amount of time off in our society. And we've designed it, you know, and like a lot of people from the rest of the world who sort of lives are built around more time off than Americans are like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
I quit my day job to be a stay-at-home mom and a playthinker.
Yeah.
So I have a lot more time off these days. It's really great.
And well, and also no small part because of your vision with this festival. So congratulations on the fifth year of Playthink and
big birthday.
Yeah. See you guys. It's gonna. I know you're gonna have a huge time. Thanks for coming and visiting on the show. Let's send you out with something from Fatbox. They're one of the acts that's playing, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if I can say Fatbox on the air, but I'm just doing it.
Thank you.
So this is Kentucky. I can't wait to find out if this is the Everly Brothers song or not. Probably not, but it might be. So you guys have a great time, right?
Yes.
And
we'll see you there.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm there in spirit if I'm not there in actuality. It just depends. But yeah, I'm sure you'll see thousands of other people there. How many people do you think are going to be there?
About 1,000.
Yeah, okay. All right. Thanks to Marie and Paige from the Playthink Festival. This is Fatbox, who will be performing out there. This is Trivial Thursdays. We're going to come back in a minute. We're going to have a little chat with the organizers of the Funky Fun Run. I hope that's right. It's close to that. Tanya Torp's going to correct me if not by phone. And then after that, we're going to visit with Anne-Marie Cornett of the venerable Festival of the Bluegrass. Stay tuned. This is Trivial Thursdays.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.FM and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.FM/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.
Tanya, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, wow, you are. I'm always so thrilled when that actually happens and it works. good morning, dear. How are you?
I am fabulous. How are you this morning? You're sounding great.
Well, thank you very much. This is my adorable voice. Tanya Torp on the phone here. Tanya, who's involved in so many wonderful things, not the least of which is your own front yard, actually, which I marvel at every time I go down. Every time I go down Elm Tree Lane.
Oh, my husband is the mastermind behind that. He's fantastic.
Let's give Christian full credit. Yeah.
Yeah,
your front yard is a bounty of produce, is it not?
It is. It's a community garden for our neighbors, and it really does create community. People stand around and talk with each other and share recipes, and it's kind of amazing when you plant a garden. What happens?
And you're just right at the forefront of that, I think, in terms of the most legit kind of, you know, urban community garden, like you said, and the magic that happens. I've seen it many times. I've sort of cruised that route quite often, and there's usually a collection of people in front of your house in your amazing community garden front yard.
Yeah, it's pretty magical.
So, but you're up to so many things, and we haven't seen each other in a little while, so I'm happy to at least have some time with you on the phone. I'll take that. I'll take that if that's what I get.
Thank you so much.
You, one of your things is coming up this weekend, right?
Yeah, so my day job is I work with Step by Step, which is this amazing organization where we work with young single mothers, and they are ages 13 to 24. And we have about a staff of 3, and we serve 120 moms. And so we do fundraisers to keep the lights on, but also so that we can empower these young moms to do some amazing things. And so we are doing a 5K called the Funky Fun Prom Run. Is that the coolest thing you've ever heard? Funky Fun Prom Run.
It's very evocative. It's definitely very evocative. I'm seeing a lot of frill. I'm seeing frill. I'm seeing hoops.
So you dress in your favorite prom decade, or you can wear one of our cool tuxedo or dress-inspired shirts that you get for registering, which is really cool. But it's a 5K where it's the only 5K where you get sashed and crowned, by the way. So it's Saturday, June 4th at 6:30 at Coldstream Park. And it's going to be a huge party, pretty much.
Which, live band. Which one is Coldstream Park? Is that out Newtown Pike?
It is. Okay. It is indeed. It is. And so we're going to have food trucks. So we'll have Stab Chill, Jasmine Rice, and Chef Mikey out there to give us all our culinary wares. We're going to have a live, amazing band called Project 859, and they're going to do all the songs from all the decades. So all the coolest prom songs they're going to do it while you're running. You're still going to hear them being amazing. It's just going to be great.
So the locale, I just want to say again, this is like, it's kind of, it's out there where it's sort of an underpopulated kind of industrial park, sort of, or am I wrong about that? Okay.
Yeah, it's totally an industrial park, and in the middle of this huge industrial park is this beautiful little park. There's a dog park next to it, and it's green and beautiful, and so it's kind of a hidden treasure.
It is, yeah, it is. And then on one side of it, the Legacy Trail cuts through on one side of it, I think.
Exactly. So you see lots of people walking, running, and biking on that Legacy Trail.
Yeah, and that cuts through there, and then cruises out towards Spindletop and the Kentucky Horse Park and all that. So yeah, that is it's sort of a funny little oasis out there in the middle of what appears to the outside from the outside to be kind of an industrial park. So that's a neat locale.
So I think a lot of folks are going to be surprised at the end of the 5K when we recreate the final dance scene from the film Footloose. it's going to be amazing, and so you got to get in on that. Because who doesn't love Kevin Bacon? Just saying.
I don't want you to tell anyone this, okay? I've never actually seen Footloose.
What?
my next guest, Anne-Marie Cornett, just whipped around and glared at me. Now, I haven't. I'll take it one step further. My brother hasn't either. So, I don't know. It's sort of a family defect, really, I guess.
I can't even handle it. Well, we're neighbors, Mick. So, one day, you're coming over. You're going to hang out in the garden, and then we're going to go inside and watch Footloose together.
Oh, let's see. So, what was it? Okay, so people, this is like I know what I was going to ask you, and this is like a question from an absolute, this is a question that maybe some people are just kind of just don't, I like to ask the ignorant questions that other people are afraid to ask because they look stupid. That's the kind of the theme of my show. And so like 5K, I mean, is that far? Can people do that? Can most people do that?
Yes, most people can walk it. It's actually 3.1 miles.
Okay.
So it's we've got a great course, and so a lot of people are going to walk it. Some people will run it. You can usually do it in about 30, 45 minutes. We figure everybody will be done. But there are some people, like our own Josh Nassim, who runs pretty fast, who gets done in like 15 minutes. But it is 3 miles, 3.1.
Okay. Yeah, that seems – I think I could do that. That seems reasonable.
It's totally doable.
But do I – can I do it in a prom dress?
You can. You can – you would look great in a prom dress.
May I do it in a prom dress?
Yes, you may.
Can and may.
It is welcome for everybody to wear whatever they want. You must be clothed. Let me say that, or my executive director might say something. You must be clothed, but you can wear any prom. Some people were saying they're going to do prom of the future, so it's any decade you want. So you could do prom of the future as well.
Prom of the future sounds like the most terrifying dystopian novel I've ever heard of. let's see. So it's tell me again when this is.
So this is this coming Saturday, and it is June 4th at 6:30 p.m. at Coldstream Park.
Okay.
Today is actually until noon. Today is the last time that you can actually sign up online at www.funkyfunpromrun.com.
Okay.
Funkyfunpromrun.com. Otherwise, you will see us in person at Race Packet Pickup or in person on the day of.
Okay.
You can still register, but only until noon online today you can register.
Okay, gotcha.
And can I give you like a big announcement that we just found out?
Sure.
Wellandgood.com just voted our race one of 50 coolest races in the entire country.
Congratulations.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Let's see. Wow. So, and this is, it's called the Funky Fun Prom Run.
Funky Fun Prom Run.
When did this idea pop into your head, Tanya?
Well, you know, it actually came from some of our moms. You know, I mentioned our young single moms are ages 13 to 24, and some of our interns were coming up with cool ideas, and our moms love prom. I mean, a lot of them are high schoolers, and so the idea of having a prom-themed run was really appealing to them. And then we had some interns, some social work interns, who took the idea and ran with it and just thought, this is great. So we're very collaborative, and we encourage young people to be inspirational. And so these young moms and some of our interns said, this is a great idea. So we've been working on it for a couple of years. And these young moms that we work with, we do amazing things with them. Last week, we helped a 20-year-old and her son find permanent housing, who was on her way to being homeless. This week, I took a young woman who's experienced incredible trauma to her first therapy appointment ever. And we empowered 6 moms to enroll into college last year, and they're all getting A's and B's right now. So if you run this race, you're helping us to do those things to empower these young women. We don't do handouts or anything like that. These young women earn everything they do, and they're so empowered. And so coming to the Funky Fun Prom Run, the money, all proceeds, 100% goes to this this amazing organization, Step by Step.
Tanya, you do such amazing good things. I just want to be closer to you so that my sort of, you know, barely do-gooding existence is amplified a little bit by the good that you do. I think everyone else should do that, too.
Well, you know what? We need folks like you who can amplify the work and the needs that are out there. So we appreciate you always being willing to have us on the show.
Well, sure. I hope you'll come and visit in person next time.
You know it.
So do that.
Me. I'll come anytime. Yeah. 7 a.m. is a good time for me. I'm down.
Well, you come on down to the bunker, as we call it here. So, Tanya Torp on the phone here and talking about the Funky Fun Prom Run. So, which is, what did you say it had been declared?
It was just voted one of the 50 coolest races in the entire country that you must do this year.
Okay.
By wellandgood.com, they voted us one of 50 coolest races. So if you don't sign up, you're missing one of the 50 coolest races in America. You know, funkyfunprom.com.
Okay. Well, listen, I want to thank you for coming in. And let me, I'm going to send you out here with what did you say you were going to do at the end of the whole thing? The 23-string band there with Bee's Knees from their Catch 23 album. Anne-Marie Cornett is here. Hi, Anne-Marie.
Hello, Mick.
Nice to see you.
It's good to see you, too.
Those guys are probably big buddies of yours. I don't know. They've played Festival of Bluegrass before, I'm thinking.
They have. We love the 23-string band. They interesting story. We booked them a number of years ago when they were just getting their start, and they set up their merch table as our artists do, and they went and they sold. And we had gotten a little bit of kickback from our audience when they saw, they were like, "Who's this band that you booked for, you know, Thursday night? We've never heard of them."
And you didn't get kickback. You got blowback.
Yes. Thank you.
This is great. I get to help you because earlier on the show, I called one of my guests a misogynist when I meant a masochist. So I feel like I've been redeemed here.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Give and take.
If you got kickback from your audience, they all gave you a little bit of money to do whatever the thing was.
Right. But blowback. Thank you. And so they played and they just killed it. And after they went to their merch table, their line went well past, if you're familiar with the Horse Park Campground, their line went well past the pavilion. And they sold every CD and merch item they had for their entire summer tour at our
okay.
festival.
Now, so let's back up, because this is kind of endemic of bluegrass. You said you got some blowback from the audience because these guys were just kind of...
They were not a traditional bluegrass band.
Right.
Right.
And this can be a bone of contention.
Indeed.
It has been for many, many years.
And remains right. a bone of contention. So the Festival of the Bluegrass was started by my husband's grandparents, Bob and Jean Cornett. And what Jean, Grandma, would like to tell us whenever we kind of started getting this blowback was when she booked the Seldom Seen, they were not considered traditional bluegrass music because it was Bill Monroe and it was Ralph Stanley. So that was always like her words of comfort to us was the Seldom Seen was not traditional bluegrass. And now they're like the hallmark of traditional bluegrass. But, you know, Nadine or something later, that song is not traditional bluegrass, but it will get everybody in the audience on their feet dancing.
And then did Grandma ever raise a middle finger to the naysayers?
I'm not sure I can wrap her out that way.
Sorry. So this does bring us to an interesting point, which is the Festival of the Bluegrass, which is in its
43rd
year.
Yeah.
It is. It's a institution. It's a Kentucky. It's also a family business.
It is. So
Karen, are you married into the family?
I'm married
business?
Into it, unbeknownst to me. And I wouldn't trade it for anything. I feel very proud to be a part of this amazing cultural event. It really is a celebration of Kentucky. And I'm a South Dakota girl. I'm not a Kentuckian, but I love this state, and I love the traditions and the culture and the heritage of this state. And this festival celebrates that. We're not trying to be Bonnaroo. We're not trying to be some big thing. We're the Cornett family, and we organized this in our living room, and my five-year-old helped stamp envelopes with ticket orders in it. You know, it's about
time he got put to work.
Yeah. I mean, he actually is on the schedule for the first time this year. He's selling T-shirts on a Friday.
He better show
up,
and he better be on time.
Oh yeah, yeah. Grandparents are responsible for that. But you know, we get, you know, maybe 8,000 up to 10,000 people a year, uh-huh. and that's a good sized crowd for us, and it's very accessible, and it's just very homespun, and it is what it is, and that's all it is. It's also
I think it's sort of self-explanatory to the name of the festival, right?
Well, my husband likes to say we are such an old festival that we are the festival of the bluegrass.
He gets fired up about it.
He does. Well, he also likes to say that he has been, so when sometimes we get people who come up, the people who are less energized by the newer acts that we may book, they'll come up and they'll say, I've been going to this bluegrass festival for 20 years and it's changed. You know, they get heated, and my husband will look at them and say, I've been to this festival every year that I've been alive, including in the womb. Because the festival's older than he is, so, you know.
Mic drop.
Yes, exactly.
So it is interesting. So this is it, you know, to get back to, you mentioned the 23 String Band and how they really won everybody over.
They did, and that relationship with them and the relationship that we have with a lot of our bands is a mutual respect for their craft, and it's a respect for our audience and what we're trying to do at the Festival of the Bluegrass. But 23 String Band, they broke up 2 years ago. They decided they were going to go their separate ways, and they're doing just amazing things. They're teaching music. They're in Louisville. They've started schools. They're just doing wonderful things, starting families. And I love this story. Over Christmas this past year, my dad, who loves 23 String Band, they come for the festival every year from South Dakota. My dad said, is there any chance 23 String Band's going to come back this year? And I was like, sorry, Dad. They're no more. I miss them, but you know, they've gone their separate ways. And not 2 weeks later, I got a text from Chris Jouse, who's the front man for the band, and he was like, "Hey, we want to do 4 or 5 shows this year. Can we come back to the festival?" And I was like, "Yes, yes, you can." So we're really excited to have them back for this kind of limited tour reunion. And they're going to come out. They're going to camp while they're out there, and they come out and they have a good time too. So that's great.
So we're full circle here, and we go from the band, a band that needing to prove themselves in front of a crowd, to a band that probably a bunch of people are going, they're like, 23 String Band's going to be there.
Absolutely. 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 They're great. And another band that we have coming back, that's kind of, you know, we have our anchors. We have Lonesome River Band. We have Third Time Out. We have Seldom Seen. They are there pretty much every single year. And
they're giants.
They're giants. And our audience, they know all of their songs. It's a big sing-along. You know, they close the show down, and they just bring this it's a consistency, but it's also it's home. It's like a homecoming for our audience when they come and those bands are there. And Town Mountain is a great band that's been playing our festival for a lot of years, and they're rising fast. And they're a traditional bluegrass band out of Asheville, North Carolina, that has a real nice edge to them. They are traditional, but they're just they ramp it up a little bit. They just turn it up to 11, and they're really fantastic. And so they're kind of taking over that Saturday night, seldom seen. They're getting up there, and they've had some members leave in the last 2 years, and so they're still coming and playing, but they're not closing down the show. So we've added Town Mountain, and they're going to close the show down for us on Saturday night, and they're just spectacular.
This is all the Kentucky Horse Park
campground.
Campground, yeah.
Yep.
Because this is another sort of hallmark of Festival of the Bluegrass, and maybe kind of bluegrass festivals in general. But it's this, and it's been kind of adopted in some ways by things like Bonnaroo and some of these rock festivals where everybody goes and camps and kind of hangs out the whole time, and there's kind of activities for all different ages and stuff.
Yeah. When the festival started in the 70s, it came out of Bob and Jean, Grandma and Granddad, touring and going to bluegrass festivals as attendees. And they were going to these festivals, and there was a lot of trash, and they were dirty, and they weren't well organized, and there weren't good facilities. And they were like, we can do this better than these other festivals are doing. And so the first event was held at Walnut Hall Farm, which is what is now the Kentucky Horse Park. So it was just it was just the farm. And then when the state bought the property to build the horse park, they moved out to Masterson Station Park. And they were there till 1990. In 1990, they moved back to the Kentucky Horse Park. So one of the things we really pride ourselves on is our festival is located in one of the most beautiful state parks in the state. There's clean facilities. There's lots of showers. There's a swimming pool. There's playgrounds and tennis courts. And with your armband, you get access to all of it. So it's a very, I refer to it when you're out there, it's festival time, because you don't have a clock. You may know where you want to be to see a certain artist, but you can just get up and make breakfast and go to the pool and then come back and take a nap in your hammock.
Mm-hmm.
It's just very easy, and
that there's something to be said for that kind of campground vibe. That's what I'm
saying.
I've spent time out there, and campgrounds they'll kind of slow you down.
Absolutely.
In a good way.
Absolutely.
And that one's great. Like
it's
you said,
a
there's
great.
A pool. There's a magnificent pool. There's just kind of the horse park's right over. You can just walk all over the place. Let's talk about this. If you're a Lexingtonian and you want to go and you want to get a little bit of exercise,
Legacy Trail.
You can ride your freaking bike
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I've done it.
Right off. Yep.
You don't have to be a superhero. You don't have to have incredible powers of fitness to ride your bike out the Legacy Trail to the horse park. And when you get there, you'll feel like the master of the universe.
Well, and what I would do is I would send my family on to set up camp so that when I got there, I would have a nice place to sit and a cold, frothy beverage waiting for me in the cooler.
You're a special master of the universe.
Yes.
Well played. Thank well played.
You. Thank you.
Anna Marie Cornett is here of the Festival of the Bluegrass, which is getting underway weekend after this?
June 9th through 12th.
Yeah.
Our music starts on Thursday. We actually we've renegotiated our contract with the horse park a couple years ago, and it's really great. Our weekend camping ticket is actually a week. It's Sunday to Sunday. So we really love to extend that campground vibe.
Mm-hmm.
People can come out and set up camp, get their spot, and really start their festival experience before the stage goes live on Thursday evening.
So it starts up Thursday evening, but you've made it possible for people who like to come and super chillax at a campground to do so.
Yep.
And then things get underway for 3 days?
Four days. It starts Thursday at 7. We have a kids camp for young bluegrassers ages 6 to 18. They start on Tuesday, and they learn how to play bluegrass music from mentors. Some are camp graduates, some are musicians, and they just pick under trees and under pop-ups, and they open the festival on Thursday night. So at 7 o'clock, the graduates of the 2016 Kentucky Bluegrass Music Camp get on stage and play their music.
Now, let's see. So there's this participatory element that's really cool with bluegrass festivals and with you guys in particular, I would say, which is the fact that so many people in the audience, or plenty of people in the audience, are casual pickers.
I would say more than casual pickers.
Okay.
The what happens on stage is fantastic. It's a phenomenal concert series. What happens in the campgrounds equals what happens on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Wandering through the campsites at all hours of the day and night, you're going to stumble upon some of the best jam sessions that you've ever seen. And it was interesting. I was talking to one of the directors of the kids camp, and she said one of the things that they've found is lacking in some of the bluegrass music instruction is kids learning how to jam.
Okay.
And how to share the spotlight in a jam session. And I never really thought about that. I never really thought about how do musicians learn how to jam, because you need to have a respectful mentor to help guide you through that process of learning how to jam. And so we're adding jamming workshops to the camp this year. But I think for a lot of people,
is jam like for the purposes of this discussion?
Sure.
What does jam mean?
Four or five musicians with different instruments sitting around playing the same song and playing catch with the lead.
Yeah.
So the mandolin takes it for a verse, and then they know when to pass it on to the fiddle player.
Right.
And they know when to pass it on to the guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of up-and-coming musicians that see this is my song instead of this is our song.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay.
And so I think at the Festival of the Bluegrass, it's a safe place to learn how to jam, to take some risks and put yourself out there, because you're observing, you're with this group of people who's probably played together for a long time and really seen how that process of music sharing and works.
Mm-hmm.
And that collaboration. So it's really neat.
So the festival, which has been going on for how many years?
Well, it's our 43rd festival, okay. So 42 years.
So it's been going on long enough that I'm wondering if you have documented any cases of, you know, these kids moving onto the main stage, basically, over time, you know, becoming...
I think the best examples of that are our kids camp graduates.
Uh-huh.
Bela Fleck was an early instructor.
Wow, that's attendee fantastic.
At the festival.
Uh-huh.
So he would be one. Allison Krauss, while she performed before the camp started, she, when she was a teenager, got her start at the Festival of the Bluegrass.
Yeah, those are some minor examples. Well done.
Yeah, and I think the 23 String Band in Town Mountain and those bands that we're seeing now, this year we have a young girl from Eastern Kentucky, Micaiah Taylor, who we saw, one of our uncles saw on stage and was like, this girl is incredible. So we booked her, and she's 11 years old and she's phenomenal. And we love giving people that step.
Uh-huh.
That says, you know, let's play the Festival of the Bluegrass. They can put it on their resume. We're an institutional bluegrass festival. You know, we're one of the oldest in the country, so that's a big deal for people to be able to say they played our event, and so we love to give people that opportunity. Maybe she'll be the next Allison Krauss, you know?
Right. Anna Marie Cornett is here of the Festival of the Bluegrass, June 9th through 12th this year, and let's see. Why don't we? You were talking about so. I noticed that you queued up. I asked you to queue up a couple songs, and you did queue up a seldom seen song.
Yeah, Nadine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's hear a little bit of Nadine, and we'll come back and talk some of the seldom seen. We'll come back and talk a little bit about how
great.
Venerable they are, and just talk a little bit more about Festival of the Bluegrass. This is Trivial Thursday. Seldom Seen there with Nadine. Seldom Seen, who are just giants in the world of bluegrass.
They've played 42 out of our 43 festivals.
Yeah.
So we just get an email from Dudley a couple months out. He says, see you in June.
Now, were they ever called infidels?
Oh, yes.
See, why?
Oh, yes. Well, because the Ralph Stanley, Bill Monroe crowd back in the day when they were first, you know, they were very progressive.
Bluegrass fans they can be big finger pointers.
They can. They can.
And it's out of passion. They have this incredible passion for it.
It is. It is. Last year we had somebody who came and they were not happy with our particular lineup that year. And my father-in-law was sitting at the office, and because we're staffed by, you know, cousins and dads and moms. And he was sitting at the office and he said, well, tell me who you would like to hear. And the gentleman started rattling off his list, and he said, you do realize that 75% of those artists are dead, right? And it pretty much stopped the conversation right in its tracks. So, you know, the truth of the matter is we are a traditional bluegrass music festival. Mm-hmm. But we also appreciate and recognize the great music that's coming out of these younger artists that kind of straddle that line. We have, you know, the Wooks, which are a local band who we just love. They really, you know, half their songs are very traditional bluegrass, but they'll just turn it up a little bit, and we love that, and we respect that craft and the natural progression and evolution of the music. We're not going to book Leftover Salmon. We're not going to book the Avett Brothers. Mm-hmm. But we're going to book, you know, music that people want to hear.
And they're going to come out in droves for it.
Yeah.
So what are some of the things that you're excited about this year? Maybe some new things or some sort of like side ventures?
Sure. The biggest thing that we're doing this year that's new is an after party Saturday night featuring Restless Leg String Band.
Who were on my show last week, I think.
They're fantastic. Yeah. And they're going to be playing second stage throughout the weekend as well.
I was in awe of them when they were here.
They're a superb band.
But there's something to be said for bluegrass in general, standing right in front of it. Like I want to say this to people. If you think maybe that you don't like bluegrass, or you don't know, or you don't seem to really have an opinion, if you stand right in front of it, it's different. It's different.
It's totally different. And bluegrassers are some of the best people I have met.
Yeah.
It's equal footing. You can be a coal miner, you can be a UK professor, you can be a librarian. You're on equal footing when you're at a bluegrass festival.
Yeah. I'm sorry I interrupted you though. We've just got about 2 minutes left. So you've got the after party.
After party Saturday night. The other thing I want to say is we are a very family friendly festival. We have kids activities throughout the day, Friday and primarily on Saturday. Kids 12 and younger are free, and it's we want people to come out and bring their families, mm-hmm. be there for some family time.
Yeah, and then what was that? There was something else we were talking about, right? That you were kind of excited about. Maybe I missed it though, or maybe you just said it. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little scatterbrained.
And I'm excited for all of it.
Sure, of course.
It's a great event.
And after all these years, Festival of Bluegrass, strumming and picking ever forward.
Indeed.
Out at the Kentucky Horse Park,
June 9th through 12th, festivalofthebluegrass.com.
Yeah. Let's see. People coming from all over creation, I expect.
Yeah, we've got, four countries represented outside of the United States. And lots of people. Lots of people. When our ticket orders come in, I'm like, wow, why are you coming? You're from Brooklyn.
Amazing.
So
amazing.
It's great. It's really cool.
Because it's so awesome is why.
Well, it's the spirit of Kentucky. One little weekend. It's been described as a family reunion a Kentucky family reunion on steroids.
Yeah.
It's just completely authentic. It is what it is, and we're really proud of it.
Anne-Marie Cornett of the Festival of Bluegrass, the family business.
Indeed.
Started by your grandparents-in-law.
Yep, Bob and Jean.
And in its, say, 43rd year. So that's about it for Trivial Thursdays. Thanks so much for tuning in.